You can also check WUSB.FM. That's got schedules and playlists and ways to donate to our community radio station. Blessed to be here at the campus of Stony Brook University. Right now, it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
welcome. This is Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, and your host Emmanuel's right there.
A microphone, though. Isn't it great to have control, Kyle? We can just turn my microphone off and
let me try that again.
I have no voice.
And your host Emmanuel is right there.
Yeah, so I can't say. Oh no, that's good. That's good. It's power is good for the head.
No, I just forgot about your channel. Pardon me for that.
It's not up to me to pardon you. So how are things?
Ugh. Don't ask. It's personal.
Well, it's a lot of work. Kyle's building a treehouse, and we had a thunderstorm earlier. It's kind of a lot of things have to be redone.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are all metaphors for other things. But
no, I like that. No, that's great. That is a really fantastic way to put it. I'm all right. It's swampy out.
Yeah, it is.
Is that a way to describe the weather?
Well, I realized yesterday I was having such trouble breathing.
Yeah, me too.
And, I guess I realized that, yeah, it's swampy out, and that's probably why.
Yeah, and so that's sort of got me a little, trying to catch my breath on, and that's also metaphorical. There's a lot going on. It's
metaphorically speaking.
Yes, metaphorically speaking.
Which in itself is another metaphor.
Right, right.
It's a double-edged metaphor.
And we could go on and on making metaphors, but long story, really, really long. I'm just a little whooped.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on in the media and with this campaign. This is the final Super Duper Tuesday.
Promise me it's over. No, it's not. You know it's not over. Okay, yeah, this is it. Tonight is the final night, the final primaries, California and Jersey and both Dakotas, and a couple of other places too.
Right.
But then you got the conventions, two of them. And then after that, you've got 5 months of campaigning. And you know what? The next campaign probably begins before the election. It never ends.
It really does not end. We are in the thick of it. Even though this is the beginning of the summer, this is the middle of the general, the primary for the general election. And this is crucial. California is up tonight. Bernie's still in with, we can get into that later. And it's interesting. You've said this before, how the Republicans are fractured. They're agreeing with Democrats now, apparently, on this judge with the university thing.
Oh, the Mexican judge.
Right. The Mexican judge who can't judge Donald Trump, which I had this thought. You know, I realize how racist that is. It's like, if it was the other way around, like, does that mean if it's a white judge, who judges Trump, how is that not racist? I mean, there's bias there too. So it's very interesting to see how they're distancing themselves from that language because this is the way it's being said, is it is the Trump corporation's problem. Okay. Right. That's what I heard this afternoon, a little bit of that.
Because
kind
it's
of
about,
language.
It's about Trump University.
Right. And that doesn't have any bearing on the campaign.
Yeah. But Trump, candidate is the one saying these
right.
things.
Right. And that's the disconnect. It's really peculiar how it's being spun. And suffice to say that Republicans and Democratic leadership are now basically saying, this is wrong. This is racist. This is bad. The very people that fell in line we were talking about a couple weeks ago. They're now falling over themselves to try to have control, and they don't have it.
I would like to know what it must feel like to be a Republican these days, because really, I can't imagine it. I actually, I have a lot of respect for, I never thought I'd say this, Lindsey Graham, because he's the only one that is consistently saying what he believes in, that Donald Trump is unfit for office, whereas all the others are just, as you say, falling in line and and just towing what they're now told is the party line. Before they said, no way this guy can be a candidate. We saw some clips of pieces from months ago where people were laughing hysterically at the prospect of Trump being the candidate, and now here it is, and these very people that said, oh, over my dead body, well, okay, I guess I could be swayed, Paul Ryan is the worst example of that. Now he has endorsed Trump, but I have a theory. I think he's been offered the vice presidency. I think you might see a Trump-Ryan ticket. You heard it here first. Folks.
That's good. That because is very prophetic.
Think about that. If you get someone like Ryan, then you might be able to get a lot more Republicans who think, okay, well, at least there's one sane person on the ticket, and all hope may not be lost. And that would explain why he came round. He wants to save the party by throwing himself in, and also that way he's not in an uncomfortable position of not endorsing his party's candidate.
Yeah, I think definitely the tactic is to create Trump's job as a mouthpiece and a figurehead, and that's it. Cut him off from every other part of the institution they're trying to protect. That's absolutely what's going on, and it's
not going
to
work.
It's very hard for them to both support and distance themselves from their now presumptive, or not even presumptive, their sort of their endorsed candidate. It's going to be very interesting. They're already having difficulty.
It's never going to work, Kyle. There's no way you can keep Trump, who it would be president of the United States, from messing up everything, from getting his hands. I mean, you could be Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, as vice president, would not have what it takes to keep this guy away from the button and from everything else that he could unbelievably screw up. So,
yeah,
don't kid yourself, folks. No matter who he picks as vice president, it's not going to make us safe. This guy would still be in control, and it'd just be a nightmare, a total nightmare.
Enough of that. There's plenty of time for that in the future, and I'm sure it's not going to go away that soon. I could go on and on, but yeah, they're already having trouble with it, and they don't have control over their party, a la the primary process, which we saw all those 17 candidates fall, and now it's even less control over their party with this as the lead, who has a lot of support. People actually out there. We've yet to spot these creatures, but
we were behind one on the highway the other day in the pickup truck. Remember that person with the Trump stickers?
Yeah, you know, you're right. We were behind a bumper sticker that said it had Trump regalia on it. So I know it was from that camp. So they exist and they drive. That's as much as we know.
And they
so
don't
far.
Signal either. I just want to point that out. At least this one didn't.
Was that? Yeah, I guess that wasn't there. No, there wasn't a lot of signaling.
I'm going to keep track. I'm going to keep track from now on. When I see somebody with a Trump bumper sticker, I'm going to see what their driving habits are. I'm going to compare it.
So if you're parking, if you're turning on a one-way street or backing around a corner, we're watching you.
Yeah, we're watching.
Yeah. And when you back around a corner, bumper stickers first. So it's like it's first thing someone's
going to
see.
And also, all listeners, you can participate in this as well. Wherever you happen to be, if you see a Trump supporter driving by, take note as to what their driving habits are. And we can compare that to the rest of the populace, which I know is a pretty low bar right now. But I don't know. Maybe we can put our finger on the source of the problem. It's possible. Okay, but you know what? There is another candidate, or there will be another candidate. Actually, there's two other candidates. You know, I have to say, I don't know how you feel about this, Kyle, but the way the media has been treating the whole Clinton thing has been pretty shameful. Well, of course, the way they've been treating the Trump thing has been super shameful, but the Clinton thing, you know, the race is not over. Do you think the race is over? I mean, today is the final day of the primaries. But is that race? They've been saying it's over now for weeks, maybe even longer than that. They say he has no mathematical chance of catching up. And it's easy to believe that. If you look at the numbers and you count all the superdelegates and all that, well, it's a pretty formidable lead. How is he ever going to catch up to that? I want to read you a quote from the Bernie Sanders campaign. It came out yesterday. It is unfortunate that the media, in a rush to judgment, are ignoring the Democratic National Committee's clear statement that it is wrong to count the votes of superdelegates before they actually vote at the convention this summer. Secretary Clinton does not have and will not have the requisite number of pledged delegates to secure the nomination. She will be dependent on superdelegates who do not vote until July 25th and who can change their minds between now and then. They include more than 400 superdelegates who endorsed Secretary Clinton 10 months before the first caucuses and primaries and long before any other candidate was in the race. Think about that. They endorsed her before all of this nonsense started, before Trump, before everything. More than 400. Now, our job from now until the convention is to convince those superdelegates that Bernie is by far the strongest candidate against Donald Trump. How hard is that to understand? They have not voted yet. Yeah, they pledged themselves, but they can unpledge themselves, and that's completely within the rules. So unless she is ahead by more than those 400 that have already pledged themselves, and she is not, then he is still in the race. And if tonight the number of pledged delegates that she is ahead by does not exceed, I think it's 450 in that range, then he is still mathematically, and what would he have to do to win? He would have to convince those 450 superdelegates to change their minds. That's really it. You know, none of this, he has to win 90% of all the remaining states or all the things the media is putting in front of us. No, he just has to make a really strong case as to either why he is the superior candidate or why Hillary Clinton is the inferior candidate to those people at the convention. It's an uphill battle for sure, but it could happen. It's just one argument he has to win.
You're right on, spot on. I mean, it's also that it's not being reported. It's being characterized as a Trump versus Hillary back and forth, everything but a debate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as though those superdelegates are unknown. They're not also loyal. They really don't have to honor their position in the context of what constituents feel about it. It is their choice. So if they are swayed, they're not necessarily bound to representing a group of people or going a certain way because of a popular vote somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, as you said, free and have autonomy at the convention to do this. So I think it has been a combination of, a messaging from the Hillary camp to get a binary of her versus Trump,
mm-hmm.
and keep the issue discussion and everything, that the conciliatory stuff that her and Bernie have been doing, kind of in history now. They kind of do want to like try to skip past that, and it is unfair.
Well, the thing is, I'm hearing a lot of talk about how the party has to be united against Trump. And I agree, the party does have to be united against Trump or Trump will win. But the convention hasn't happened yet. The convention is when you unite the party. That's when everybody comes out of it saying, this is our candidate. And the point that the Sanders campaign is making now is that that hasn't happened yet. They haven't gotten to that stage. Until they get to that stage, he needs to try everything he can to win. He's a candidate. That is what he should be doing. So it makes perfect sense to me that he has not let up, that he has not conceded. And Hillary Clinton should be agreeing with this. She should be embracing the process and saying, yeah, I look forward to the convention when I will convince those superdelegates to vote for me and I will win the nomination then. And at that point, that is when unification is essential. I've seen a lot of stupid Bernie Sanders supporters, too, that say, oh, I'm not going to vote for anybody other than Bernie Sanders.
A lot.
That's suicide. We talked about that when we went to the caucus in Washington State.
Yep.
We mentioned that at the caucus, that people were saying that there was a concern. It's Bernie or nobody. Well, it's worse than nobody if it's not Bernie and he's not the candidate. So you have to be really careful about that. Now, people are speaking emotionally now, but after that convention, it is essential whoever wins, whether it's Bernie or whether it's Hillary, that they have the support of everybody. That is absolutely, you know, not even a discussion point. But in order to secure the other candidates' people, you need to acknowledge them. You need to acknowledge their issues. And whoever you pick as vice president has to appeal to those people. If doesn't, it's another form of political suicide. So I hope people are thinking carefully here, because there are many ways this race can be lost. All of them involve stupidity, and there's no shortage of that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of jumping the gun, I guess. Jumping to conclusions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this has been an unpredictable political cycle here. So, it's it's going to be very interesting. It's important, yeah, to look past your candidate. I mean, I remember my first caucus, you know, I was for a particular candidate, Dean at the time, right? But that, you know, caucus, I participated and had other citizen members telling me, no, it's going to be this person, it's going to be that person. Ended up not being that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to support who you support, but also be willing to shed that and look to other candidates and realize that there is this binary that we're up against, or at least the system would have you think that. And if you don't participate, you can't be surprised at the result. How, speaking of, conventions,
mm-hmm.
There was already a convention.
Oh, you talk about the Libertarians.
I'm talking about the Libertarians. The wow. Libertarians, a third party, I just said binary, but a third party has just had their convention, and Gary Johnson's their candidate.
I actually like him. I saw him on Samantha Bee the other night, and yeah. he's got a good sense of humor, I'll say that. I don't
Isn't
agree with
funny?
Most of what he says, but he's a funny guy.
He's really funny.
He would be a panic to have in the White House, a good panic.
yeah.
So
I kind of was, it was endearing.
Uh-huh.
It was a very endearing bit to watch a little of that on C-SPAN and, you know, the various outlets where that was broadcast. I guess online you can see
I watched a little bit of that, too, on C-SPAN.
It was crazy.
That's one way to describe some of the... In fact, he described them as bad bleep crazy, some of the people that show up to these things.
Yeah.
People were talking about driver's licenses and getting booed by the crowd who didn't feel that anybody should have a driver's license because it's some form of government. You know, government is a reality, and government has to regulate some things. Otherwise, what's the point of any government whatsoever? And it should represent what we want, what we need. And I don't understand how people can boo the concept of driver's licenses. You can imagine how they feel about gun ownership. It's like through the roof. Those are big problems, big hurdles to get over to get my support.
It's kind of like states' rights on steroids,
uh-huh.
You know, because a state-issued driver's license is too much.
Yeah, that is a state thing, too.
Kind of like that. Yeah, I mean, it's not even a federal ID we're talking about, which has been an issue in other countries around the world. But
I don't know. I mean, it's good to have more conversations, absolutely. But I've yet to find one that really I'm that comfortable with. You know, so...
Yeah.
I hope that we get there someday.
Yeah, we will. It's an evolving process, and I will say that they looked like a definite third party more than ever before. In the past, it had been sort of diluted by several third party platforms like the Green or what.
Yeah, what happened to the Green Party? You don't hear from them anymore.
No,
you know, they're out there, but you don't hear from them.
Yeah, not as big, I guess. Not as big nationwide, but there's Libertarians in all 50 states, or I think they have some thing they say about that. So that was interesting.
That would make it the only third party in all 50 states.
I think representation. They're on the ballot in all 50. That's what it was. That's what they were saying in the news. So
yeah, you have to be on the ballot in order to win. That's an important thing,
mm-hmm.
and so many of the other parties are not.
Yeah.
So it's just it becomes a mockery at that point. But the whole system. Well, now the Republican Party isn't going to exist much longer. I think we might be in for an overhaul of the whole system. Maybe we'll get several different kinds of parties.
If you gauge, I think younger people, the people that support Bernie, the way the critique has been supported in this campaign of the process itself, mm-hmm. of the money, of the way it's gone, it's done. I think it's been so self-referential and so self-aware
mm-hmm.
a process that we could possibly address some of these things in intelligent ways, too. I think
so many people are voting now, never voted before. Now, there's good and bad because a lot of those people are voting for Trump. A lot of young people from college are into the whole Bernie thing, and they've never voted before, and this is their first taste of the political process. You can't turn these people off. You know, you can't make it so that they get jaded and don't vote again or don't vote in November.
Or in any of the non-presidential elections, all of those things. You really have to commit yourself to the process to actually get anything out of it.
What you said is very important. It's important to vote in the non-presidential elections. And here's why. Elizabeth Warren is a good possibility for vice presidential pick for Hillary Clinton to get a lot of Bernie Sanders people on board.
Yes.
Now, if Elizabeth Warren is chosen, well, she has to give up her Senate seat. And in Massachusetts, and then the governor there would appoint the next senator. The governor is a Republican because he was voted in a different year. And now you have a Republican senator where there was a Democratic senator before because people voted in a Republican governor. And if the Senate is a close race, which it probably will be, it'll probably be 50-50 again.
Yeah.
That tips the balance. So because of voting in a Republican governor, it's likely that Elizabeth Warren can't be vice presidential candidate without losing a crucial seat in the Senate.
Yeah, the majorities in both House and Senate, that's a critical part of how legislation is passed, blocked, stopped, negotiated and worked out, checked. I mean, also then this incorporates other branches of government. I mean, it all depends on the executive, then the Supreme Court, how the entire system will work.
Mm-hmm.
It's very instructive. And so that is part of the puzzle, part of the chess game there with Elizabeth Warren. And you're absolutely, that is a very interesting vulnerability were she to leave that post.
Yes, absolutely. And it goes further than that. State Assembly, State Senate, County Legislature, all of that. It all adds up. It all tips the balance. You have a situation in North Carolina now where that state's being boycotted by just about everybody else in the country because of what their state government is doing. And it's causing national reverberations. So, you know, the people you vote in, they do have an effect, and sometimes a very big effect. It sets the tone, and you have to really think it through. But by all means, you have to show up. You can't just ignore it, because if you ignore it, other people won't. You give them so much more power as a result of that. So it's crucial that the people who are voting for the first time, that are enthused by hearing something that they like, remain enthused even if they don't get exactly what they like. It's so important to keep them engaged.
Yes, please do not. If you're new to this, if you're learning about this process, do not become disenchanted. There's always something else to look into, to talk to people about, and to realize for your communities.
Yes. I just got this in. Donald Trump has said he will not be talking about the judge anymore under heavy criticism. He has agreed not. He said today that his persistent attacks against a Hispanic federal judge have been misconstrued, an attempt to mitigate accusations of racism and intense scrutiny from Democrats and Republicans alike. Trump has repeatedly argued in recent weeks that U.S. District Judge Gonzalo Curry... Did you see the way he said his name to that throng of people? He said his name, and people were laughing as soon as he said Gonzalo, because the implication by saying the name like that was that this guy is a hater, this guy is against me, his name is Gonzalo, and everybody said, oh, of course, this is why, because he's one of those people. You know, not saying it in words, just saying it in tone, in expression, in this hidden language that racists have, and you hear it a lot.
Yeah, these little checks, these little tests, and it's so funny. This is exactly this is emblematic of that thin-skinned nature.
Yeah.
I mean, case in point right here, he's now backing off from these attacks, these like scurrilous remarks.
I mean, the guy says, you know, he's Mexican, not that there's anything wrong with that, or something to that effect. It's like, then why did you say it that way?
Yeah, apologizing for saying something is like a red flag.
It's like, I'm not racist, but... And then everything you say after that point is racist. You know, it's pretty much how it is. Yep. These are these little signals, ways of... you ever have this with like somebody you're talking to, a casual acquaintance, where they try to somehow draw you into their little bit of racism? Like, oh, look at those people over there. And then because you don't punch them in the face immediately, you're part of that belief system and they feel like they can trust you with more racist talk. I get that a lot from people, you know? It's like, oh, yeah, look at them. Look at the colors over there, you know? And they use words like that, too. People still exist like this.
Absolutely.
They somehow think you're on their side.
They endear themselves to you and, you know, use the language and base your response, and it validates the use of the language.
Mm-hmm.
And they can then feel safe to be themselves. Granted, we think and, you know, we all think and say things we don't mean or we know are not necessarily socially acceptable. I think it's happened to everyone at one point or another, but mm-hmm. it is entirely another thing to do these like safety checks in company of others. And it's not just race, class, gender. I think it happens a lot. I mean, in my experience with like locker room conversations, mm-hmm. Yes. And sort of the high-fiving frat culture.
Right.
I think there's a lot around sexual anxiety there, and there's a lot of machismo
mm-hmm.
and anxiety. So there's a lot of puffery
a lot built on anxiety and insecurity of their own, I think.
Yeah, I think it comes from within and then turns into labeling and castigating other groups
mm-hmm.
because you yourself can't identify and feel good and so on. So it's pervasive, and it is a linguistic way of finding, I guess, confidence. Kinship, even if it's completely imagined because you're consumed in this psychosis of racism or whatever it is.
Mostly self-preservation. You don't want to stand out too much because right. then you become a target.
Right, right. And you're self-checking, right? Because you hold these beliefs but you don't want to be labeled and then, you know, taught re-educated in you know the correct way, because everybody is so politically correct. We got a lot of that in this election cycle. Too politically correct. Everyone's too politically correct.
Well, you know, it's a difference. I mean, you know, we should all be able to laugh at ourselves and laugh at each other good-naturedly. There are funny exaggerations you can make about various people. Sure, we've all, you know, had quite a lot of laughs from comedy routines, TV shows, what have you. But you have to kind of, I guess, decide for yourself, is this based on hatred or is this based on camaraderie of one sort or another, where, you know, you basically are making fun of something that we're secure enough. You know, religion is a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, we can make fun of our religion because we're familiar with it. George Carlin's routine on growing up Catholic, it's hilarious. Now, if somebody else does that who's not part of it, it could still be funny, even if they're not of that particular organization. But it depends. You then have to look at what their true motives are and judge for yourselves. But then there are people who you can't say anything at all mocking to. They take great offense immediately. They're very sensitive, and I think that means they're very insecure, and that's something that has to be looked at as well.
Yeah, especially with when groups are associated, groups and issues are associated with action mm-hmm. and abuse or other kinds of kind of reprehensible behavior. I mean,
yes.
It's a lot based. A lot of it is based on association. And so on.
Yeah, very true.
If it's violence or something, that all of that kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
Contributes to it. So.
Let me finish the Trump quote, because I'm not giving Trump enough time.
Oh, yeah, finish that.
He said today, it is unfortunate that my comments have been misconstrued as a categorical attack against people of Mexican heritage. I am friends with and employ thousands of people of Mexican and Hispanic descent. He added he does not believe that one's heritage makes them incapable of being impartial, but he continued to question whether the judge has been impartial in the case. Based on the rulings that I've received in the Trump University civil case, I feel justified in questioning whether I am receiving a fair trial. He said he will no longer comment on the case. It is scheduled for trial in November after the presidential election, you can bet, though, he will still be talking about Mexicans and walls and other things.
Rapists.
Yeah. Just keep an eye out for what he does next. Do you want to try to take phone calls? We only have a few minutes to do that, I think. But we can try if
before
people are out there.
All the equipment desolders from its boards.
It's very
due
hot.
To the heat.
It's very hot in here.
It is incredibly hot. I'm sorry for my sweltering. I'm fatigued.
You went through that whole bottle of water? Wow.
I'm nearly done with it, and gosh, I am lethargic as heck. Sure. But I have the phone here.
Move under the sprinkler, that way at least you'll hydrate a little bit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. All right, so I could
Bear with Kyle here, because it is extraordinarily hot here.
I'm going to do that first. Those will be ready, and then I'm going to do this.
You know, the number 3 is in the wrong position. Just pointing it out. It should be to the left, not to the right.
Oh, yeah, but then I have to hit the button to be able to do that.
Well, yeah, that's true, but you might as well hit number 3 first, since you already hit number 2.
Oh.
Then, that takes me off mic. I forgot. It's my mistake.
Yeah, you didn't even know. Yeah, what he said is that it takes him off mic, and that's why I was waiting. So that's what you get for backseat engineering.
Wow.
And now I'm talking over it because you're playing in delay. All right, I'm out of here.
Hey,
I'm showing up. I'm showing up in delay. Wow.
90.1 FM in Stony Brook.
Well, yes. We're here, but you have to switch our headphones. We're going to hear
us.
There we go. Okay.
We're here. Thank you, listener.
That was amazing.
Gosh.
Yeah, okay. Now our headphones are popping in and out because this board is so dirty.
Well, I think it's warm. It's a very warm board. That's me fiddling with the knob.
This
okay,
board is older than the parents of some of the people that work here.
That's good.
If you can believe that.
631-632-6901, 631-632-6901, or if you're on campus, 26901.
Wait, can I just point something out?
I'm not going to stop you.
Well, first of all, our levels are very low.
In delay?
In program. Okay, I think that's better.
Okay.
You mentioned the phone number. And you know that, you know, I don't know what the exact, what?
You're right.
You don't even know what I'm going to say. What are you, in my head?
I know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say?
I do.
Okay, then say it.
They're changing the 10-digit dialing rules around here.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Yes,
I did.
Well, they're implementing 10-digit dialing. What they're going to do is, for some stupid reason, make it so everybody has to dial the area code in 631 area code.
You don't know it's stupid.
It's stupid. I do know that. Believe me, I know stupid things.
Yeah, but it could be very complicated. The equipment could need a very careful convincing.
Let me tell you something.
Certain things.
The equipment is it almost as bad shape as the equipment we're using right here.
Telephones
it's
are
old,
delicate.
It's antiquated. No, I'm talking about the switching equipment that the phone companies use.
Oh yeah.
Why can't they program it to know that you're dialing locally instead of long distance, so you don't have to dial the area code every single time? Why do you have to dial one every single time? These are antiquated things.
They're running out of numbers.
Just to, you know,
it's conservation.
It's got nothing to do with running out of numbers.
They can't recycle them. I mean, numbers are finite by definition.
You're saying one thing that has nothing to do with the other thing in an attempt to win the argument, and it's not going to work. I'll tell you why. You can program a telephone switch to know if you're dialing a local exchange or an area code based on, well, that's what the one is supposed to do, right?
You're just going to tell them how to do their job.
Okay, so, you know, if you have to dial one before an area code, you don't dial the one, you're not dialing an area code. You're dialing an exchange. So why should you have to dial the area code anyway? Okay, you can't answer that. Another example that you just experienced today, we have a DMS 100. If you don't know what that means, it's a phone switch in a central office. A central office is a building that's in every single community. It's a brick building. It's owned by the phone company. Inside there is a switching computer. It used to be a mechanical switching room, but now it's basically a computer. And you either have, basically in this area, a 5ESS made by Western Electric or a DMS 100 made by Northern Telecom. We have the latter. It's unfortunate for us because when you dial *67 to block your phone number from being sent on caller ID, you're supposed to keep dialing the phone number after that. But with a DMS-100, you have to wait for the stutter dial tone to go away. Otherwise, it doesn't process your numbers and you get a wrong number. A 5ESS, you can just dial the whole string and it can process it. This is 1970s technology at work here, and that's something you should not have to worry about.
That just tells me I'm spoiled, because in Georgetown, it's just very quick. I'm very close to the CO, and I'm pretty sure they're running a 5ESS switching system. Mm-hmm. But with this system, yeah, that stutter, it's actually a little bit after the stutter. And what I was doing is dialing kind of right as the stutter itself was ending. You got to give it a couple seconds of tone and then enter whatever, the 10 or 11 digits.
Uh-huh. It's stupid. So, okay, in a couple of weeks, folks, you're going to have to dial. If you're in the 631 area code, you're going to have to dial 631 to get to us. I think they're making it so you don't have to dial the 1. Wow. Okay, let's thank them for that. But it's an extra 3 digits. It might not sound like much, but you add it up, and you're going to be spending a lot of time on the phone. Do we have any phone calls?
We do not. So, 632-6901.
That's a shame. You know, I figured all that phone talk might get people in the mood to make a phone call.
If you're in the nation or region, tri-state area, 631-632-6901.
You left out the 1. And I don't know why the 1 is even a part of it, as I said, but if you're going to...
No, that was for the people using cell phones.
Yeah, you don't have to... Okay, there you go. There it is, right there. That's the evidence. You don't have to do it with cell phones. You don't have to dial the 1 with cell phones. Why is that? Why do you have to dial the 1 everywhere else but not with cell phones?
So if you don't have a cell phone and you're using... an instrument like a payphone, and you are in the tri-state region or nation, 1-631-632-6901.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
If you're on campus, it's 2-6901. If you're in the hallway, just knock on the door. If you're, I don't know, if you're in outer space, light years away, check up on Earth.
You know, I think what you mentioned with the campus, you only have to dial 5 digits. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's
five
nice.
5 digits. You don't have to dial the whole phone number. Should be able to do
we
the same thing.
We have a call.
Okay, I can stop talking about
Hello,
this.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I tried calling you 2 times. There was actually a person that the phone line actually went to. It actually went to someone, I think, in the phone, the other office.
Really?
Really? And you dialed just the 7 digits?
Yeah, not the 631.
And you got a message, or you got an actual employee?
An actual person. I think someone's in the office picking up the phone.
Oh, someone picked up the phone.
Wow. Lucky you.
That's human error.
Yeah, he says that's human error. And
then I did the 631, and I think that fixed it up. Maybe.
Wow. Okay, so what kind of pizza do you want?
What I wanted to talk about is about, Trump being stupid. Should I say Trump isn't really being stupid? It's the people who he is talking to who are kind of like agreeing with him who are not very smart, and he knows it. They're being persuaded. They're being easily persuaded.
Yeah, but the stupid vote. You can't hear me.
My dad's right next to
I can't say anything because he can't hear me. So
okay, yeah, no, we got the gist of it. That people are being persuaded, and thanks for that. No, we agree with you. It is about rhetoric and persuasion, and that is what's going on. We also found out a community member here is who answered the phone. It was not in the central office. So thank you for that. If you do actually talk to someone at Verizon who is working, lucky you. That's an accomplishment. But I'm sorry, caller, you didn't actually talk to someone at the phone company. That was wonderful people here at the station. You can call us and be on the air, 1-631-632-6901. If you're on campus, 2-6901. If you're on a cell phone, you can dial 631-632-6901.
If you're overseas, it's country code 1, which is a different 1 than the 1 I'm complaining about, even though it shows up in the same place.
Yeah, it's 1 and then it's 001.
No. Okay, depending on if you're calling from a landline. In Europe, for instance, you dial 00 to indicate overseas, then 1 631-632-6901.
So it's 001.
If you're on a cell phone, you hit the plus key to indicate international, and then country code 1-631-632-6901. So, it's a different one than the one you have to dial to get out of your area.
That's actually really simple and good stuff to know. If you're ever overseas, 00 is equivalent to the plus. The plus is what you'd use on a cell phone. It doesn't even have to be your cell phone. A plus 1 will allow you access into the American network.
It's the equivalent of dialing 011 to dial overseas. Do we have another phone call?
011. Okay, yeah. Okay. No, we don't have a phone call.
We have to leave delay because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe we'll get some more calls next week. You can also write the show, otw@2600.com. And you had something you wanted to share.
Well, yeah, but I want to share it live, not in delay.
Right, right. So we'll get right over to that.
Well, we're right over to that now.
Yeah, we're
live.
Here.
We sound so much better live. Yeah, it's my hope that when we move to the news studio, wherever that happens to be, that I can talk to people on the phone from the guest microphone. That's one thing we don't have the ability to do.
Honestly, it's really simple things. And as great and historical and wonderful as this station is, there's a lot left to be desired. And there's so many modern things we're missing out on that would allow us to keep our thoughts on the program and what we want to say instead of how to engineer it. However, I'm hearing wonderful things about our new space.
I am too.
The design, what it will actually become is pretty exciting.
Yes.
There's going to be a lot of modern stuff. We can share and talk a whole lot more about that in the future.
Apparently it's not actually outdoors like I was originally told.
Right. It's not going to be in a manufactured mobile trailer.
That actually was a step above what I was told. I was told it was in a parking lot without any kind of structure.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. We got two or three parking spots side by side with like some folding card tables.
A little more than that, but not much more than that. But no, apparently those rumors were not true, so we shouldn't keep spreading them.
Right. No, it's coming together. It will have all kinds of modern amenities and we promise we'll be the same show when we're there. We won't let it go to our heads because this is community radio and we depend on your support. So please donate.
I would like to, yes. Well, we're not doing a fundraiser right now, but donate on the website, wusb.fm.
It's an option.
Yeah. I do want to share something with the folks in our closing moments. We lost a great man in the last week.
We did.
Muhammad Ali. I didn't realize how much Muhammad Ali meant to the world until the sad occasion passed. I just saw the tributes pouring in from around the globe, and it really was something. And I found this quote. This quote is simply amazing. I'd like you to listen to this, Kyle, because just it says something about who he really was. You might know that Muhammad Ali refused to serve in Vietnam, refused to go fight in the war.
I learned that this week. Yeah.
Yeah. That takes guts doing something like that. It might be something many of us are faced with in the future as well. This is what he said, though, at the time. Why should they ask me to put on a uniform and go 10,000 miles from home and drop bombs and bullets on brown people in Vietnam while so-called Negro people in Louisville are treated like dogs and denied simple human rights? No, I'm not going 10,000 miles from home to help murder and burn another poor nation, simply to continue the domination of white slave masters of the darker people the world over. This is the day when such evils must come to an end. I have been warned that to take such a stand would cost me millions of dollars, but I have said it once, and I will say it again, the real enemy of my people is here. I will not disgrace my religion, my people, or myself by becoming a tool to enslave those who are fighting for their own justice, freedom, and equality. If I thought the war was going to bring freedom and equality to 22 million of my people, they wouldn't have to draft me. I'd join tomorrow. I have nothing to lose by standing up for my beliefs, so I'll go to jail. So what? We've been in jail for 400 years. I never heard that quote before, but wow, you know, this is a guy with conviction. And regardless of where you stand, you have to respect that. That's something that you see so rarely. So I went out. I remember this song that was a hit when I was a kid about Muhammad Ali. And I went out on Amazon and found it. And downloaded. In fact, I downloaded an entire album filled with 70 songs. And that's when I learned a valuable lesson. Yet another way you can get ripped off digitally. There are all these 70s collections out there that have all the right song names, all the right artists, but they're not the originals. It's like either they got the person who made the hit to record it again and make it suck, or they found somebody that sounds a little bit like them but isn't really them to record the same song and get you to buy it thinking it's the original. Well, I want to play an example before we get into the Muhammad Ali song. You ever hear the song Drift Away by Dobie Gray? It was a big hit in the back in the 70s.
I might know the tune, but I don't know it by the artist and name.
Well, press that button. You'll hear it.
Okay, let's go for this.
That's how it begins.
Okay.
Now, wait for his vocal to come in, because it's a very distinctive voice.
Day after day, I'm more confused.
It's so beautiful.
Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain.
It hits those high notes.
Yeah, I like that.
You know that's a game that I hate to lose.
Okay, now I'd like you to skip to the next track. And this is what I bought. Similar.
A little bit, I guess.
Not as dynamic.
Okay.
Day after day, I'm more confused.
That's not him.
Whoa.
That's not Dobie Gray.
But I look for the light.
There's a lot of reverb.
Yeah, he like, forgot to turn his mic on or something.
A lot of
but
reverb.
This is not Dobie Gray. It says on the damn album it's Dobie Gray. It says Drift Away. It's not. This is not the song I remember.
I'm feeling the strain.
Yeah, it's very like warm.
Ain't it a shame?
Now, if you were to buy this and say, oh, that's the song, I guess I'm remembering it differently than the way it was, you might actually be convinced that that was the original, and the original you would never hear again because this becomes the new original, you know? Now, there's another song.
Simply because of trust, the inherent trust that what they're selling is as listed what you're going to get.
And me not reading the reviews. Actually, there was only one review. But there was another song. I'd like you to just play the beginning of this song, too, because I'm sure it'll be familiar to people. It's a song called The Rapper by the Jaggers.
Okay.
Hey, girl, I bet you there's someone out to get you.
You've probably heard this before, right?
No, I don't think I have.
Really? Okay, well now let's hear the version that I got.
Wow.
It's like some junior high band.
Hey girl, I bet you.
It sounds really flat.
Yeah.
There's someone out to
and like, it's like narrow frequency range for iPod headphones. Turn it off.
Yeah, please. I can't take any more.
That is
30 songs like that. 30 songs. Hits. The album is called 30 Classic Tracks from the 1970s. And they don't say this is sung by somebody else. They give the original artist's name. And you know, if you scroll way down, you'll find something from one reviewer that says, unfortunately, these are not the original artist tracks. Instead, it sounds like studio musicians and singers. Wait for the original stuff. But you don't have to wait for the original stuff. You can find it if you just look a little harder. Turns out there's lots and lots of albums like this, because I was looking for the original version of the song I want to play about Muhammad Ali. And every single site that I got it from said not the original. So I don't know how to get the original. It was done by a guy named Johnny Wakelin. And honestly, I don't know if this is him. But this is the song, and maybe this is him.
I wonder if this is like just to make it easier on for licensing reasons. It's so weird.
It's some stupid reason, that's for damn sure. I'm sorry, folks. I want to play you the original. Maybe this is it. Maybe it's not. But the sentiment is there.
But this is as close as we can get?
Yeah.
You're sure?
That's as close as I can get.
All right. Well, until next time.
Good night.
Good night.
This here's the story of Cassius Clay, who changed his name to Muhammad Ali. He knows how to talk, and he knows how to fight, and all guy on Ali.
catch me if you can. Jab off your head. He moves like a black Superman and calls to the other guy, I'm Ali. Catch me if you can. Stings like a bee. Muhammad, the black Superman, who calls to the other guy, I'm Ali. Catch me if you can.
Kids, it's Finn. This is Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook. We continue Whitman Fest. This is the big one. Whitman Fest 2016 tonight. Walt Fest, baby. Discussing the Poet Laureate of Huntington. Plus, some songs from Birthday Boy Prince. Stay tuned right here. Finn's Revolution, WUSB Stony Brook. We'll be right back.
It was 7:45 on the line to meet the teacher, Miss Kathleen. First was Kevin, then came Lucy, third in line was me. All of us were ordinary compared to Cynthia Rose. She always stood at the back of the line, a smile beneath her nose. Her favorite number was 20, and every single day. If you ask her what you had for breakfast, this is what she'd say. Starfish and coffee, maple syrup and jam, butterscotch clouds and a tangerine, a side order of ham. If you set your mind free, baby, maybe you understand. Starfish and coffee, maple syrup and jam. Cynthia wore the prettiest dress with different color socks. Sometimes I wonder if the mates were in her lunchbox. Me and Lucy opened it when Cynthia won the round. Lucy cried, almost died. You know what we found.
Starfish and coffee,
maple syrup and jam, butterscotch clouds, tangerine, and a side order of ham. If you set your mind free, baby, maybe you'd understand. Starfish and coffee, maple syrup and jam. Oh. Just like the one she draws on every wall, every school. But it's alright, it's for worthy cause. Gonson, I keep saying starfish and coffee, maple syrup and jam, butterscotch clouds, tangerine, side order of ham. If you set your mind free, baby, maybe you understand. Starfish and coffee, syrup and jam.
That's right, Starfish and Coffee from Sign of the Times from Prince. And it's a happy birthday to, well, it's not that happy birthday, obviously, anymore. But it's a happy birthday to Prince, and we're celebrating his birthday today, among many other things that we are doing. And the biggest thing we're doing today is celebrating the birthday, which was actually last week, but the birthday of Mr. Walt Whitman, which was last Tuesday. And we did a little celebration of that last week, too. But this is the big one. And this is what we call Walt Fest 2016. And it's really got to do with a celebration of Long Island's own Walt Whitman, born in Huntington. And we're going to discuss a little of that in a little bit. But right now, we're lucky enough, as we are for our annual event, to have our friend Monk with us. Monk, welcome to Finn's Revolution once again.
Thank you, Finn, for having us. Appreciate it.
Of course, and we have some great poets, as always, visiting, right?
Oh, yeah, some people who just do amazing work on Long Island, either teaching or, you know, guiding people with poetry, all kinds of people that host readings. So, you know, anybody wants to learn about some of what's going on Long Island that with poetry, it's a really a bustling, busy place of poetry.
Right, and it is, and that's something, you know, a lot of people on the island, caught up in their lives of, you know, their kind of routines, shall we say, mm-hmm. of work and spending time home, you know, and family and this and that. We tend to do things like, you know, settle in front of the television, or the radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, plug the show.
That's right. But, you know, there's a lot of events out there to be checking out and a lot of cool things. And there's lots of, in addition to live music, which we always talk about, lots of live poetry, lots of live stuff happening. And it's a very, very vibrant, artistic community. And I don't think Long Island gets a lot of credit for that. But Whitman, of course, one of the founders of Long Island art community.
Yeah, hopefully Barbara Ryer Myers will be here. She sends out a newsletter every week, and it's sometimes on the weekend, Friday or Saturday, there could be like three or six events going on the same night. So that's how much stuff is going on.
Right. It's a busy, vibrant community. You just have to get out and check it out and get in touch with it. You know, you're not going to like everything, just like you're not going to like every band I put on, certainly, but or a show I send you to. But there's something that's going to strike you, and that does happen in this community on Long Island. And it's something we're here to celebrate today, which is Whitman's, you know, legacy and what Whitman has wrought here on Long Island. So a few years back, how long ago is it now? Monk, how many of these have we done?
Gosh, you know, the anthology Primal Sanities, which is a line from Whitman, that was published in 2007.
So have we been doing that since the first year this was published?
Yeah, you came to one of the first readings, I think, at the Emma Clark Library in probably 2008, maybe. It's like it's
seven or eight, something like that.
7 or 8 or 9 years, so yeah.
Right, and I approached you. I said, we should do a show.
I was like, sure.
That's right. And
I think I've never been asked that before.
And we've been doing it since to help celebrate the legacy and the influence of Walt Whitman on not only his own poetry, but also how he has inspired others.
Yeah, you know, he used that phrase camarado in his poem. So there is the camaraderie of the people that show up, some people that you know well because they've been coming here every time, and other people, you know, they switch off a year or so, but there's just a nice, good feeling for us to gather here as poets in the station, and so we all appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's an amazing feeling, so let's. Why don't you tell us? Well, first of all, the name of your anthology is.
It's Primal Sanities with an exclamation point, a tribute to Walt Whitman, and it's an anthology of poems and essays. The line comes from one of his poems where it's "Give me, O nature, give me again your primal sanities." So, you know, this seems to be like every year I can say we need this primal sanities more than ever, you know, as a way to connect, get back to, you know, get back forward to nature and just learn how to live sanely, do as much as we can.
Right, and that's something we lose, unfortunately, it seems we're losing a lot of. I mean, between this, everything from daily existence to the political season,
Yeah, don't get me started.
We're here to get started.
Another talk show.
Okay. But yeah, it's something where Whitman was, it's big picture stuff, and that's what Whitman dealt with, details, but also the big picture. And the big picture being, you know, our individual place in the world and our big place in the world.
Boundless energy is one of the first things that I really appreciated and learned a lot from his poetry was just the boundless enthusiasm. He's out there. He's like on sensory overload and describing things. So it's influenced a lot of people's work. And like I mentioned last year, just in the last couple of years, my view of him changed. And I just want to mention it because I think it's important. Like I was reading a book, a wonderful book by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz called "An Indigenous People's History of the United States." And so, you know, from the Native people's perspective, it was first time sort of seeing Whitman in another light. And, you know, from what she conveys is that some of what Whitman saw as the New World and the sort of the origin myth of the U.S. as kind of a frontier to be settled. So, you know, it's not to knock Whitman's poetry. I mention it to put it in perspective that some of what his sort of grand scape of America is, you know, perhaps is to me not as inclusive as it could have been, which, you know, was reflecting probably a lot of people at the times, but I bring it up to kind of widen the discussion to see him in a different perspective and say, yeah, look at it from these people's, you know, look at it from the Native people's angle too, you know?
Right, of course. So do you want to open us up with something?
Yeah, I want to basically dedicate the show. One of the poets in here is Maxwell Corydon Wheat Jr. And
Maxwell's in the Primal Sanities compilation.
Yes, he was the first Nassau County Poet Laureate. I don't know his age. He's up near like 90, and he's sadly in critical condition. And you know, I think his daughter had posted something on Facebook that, you know, he was still breathing, but she was starting to feel that he was heading elsewhere. So it's emotional time to realize that. He's just almost any poet I ever met on Long Island when I first started and for the first 10 years. Oh, yeah, I know Max Weed. I learned from him. So he's really like one of the sort of saints of poetry, just a magnanimous and a nature lover. And he has a couple of essays and a poem in the anthology, and I wanted to read a couple of short paragraphs.
Please do, and all our thoughts out, and best wishes out to Maxwell.
And thanks, Finn. This is, he titled it Walt Whitman's Natural Resources. One's mood response to the sounds and sights of nature perhaps depends on the person's psychological orientation at the time. Yet it is phenomenal how often the hermit thrush song is reported in terms of loneliness, plaintiveness. Quote, the cool, lonely meditation of the hermit thrush in the depths of the woods, says drama critic Brooks Atkinson in Once Around the Sun. Because of his known walks and enjoyment of Long Island nature, we can feel fairly certain that Whitman was well aware of the hermit thrush in the island's pine barrens and cedar swamps. That, perhaps, he actually heard it there. It would fit into the context of his overall interest and awareness of nature. This context explains many of his uses of the yellow-crowned heron, which would probably go unnoticed by the casual sojourner in the coastal wetlands. So, you know, Max is highlighting Whitman's appreciation and the awareness of nature and the birds and Whitman, you know, walking around Long Island before the LIE and all that stuff.
Before we had to create green paths. They were all green paths.
So yeah.
Okay, well, our thoughts out to Max and our thoughts out to him. And hopefully, he is on this earth a bit longer.
Yeah, we wish him and his family peaceful time. So.
Yeah. So, speaking of one of our favorites, I think we have a good friend of ours here first to lead us off in some interpretation and reading.
Yeah, we have Darrell Blaine Ford, who is a Whitman personator. He's been doing this pretty much his entire life, so he's a seasoned studier of and fan of Whitman, probably the biggest fan of Whitman I will ever know. And so we're honored that Darrell has driven out here and found his way among the campus maze, and here he is. So welcome,
I can't even find my way amongst the campus maze, and I've been doing this a long time. How are you, Darrell?
I'm doing well, thank you.
It's great to see you.
I'm always surprised to realize that I'm still able to do this and still able to try and share Walt Whitman with all and sundry.
Right, and you do this in many ways. I mean, Monk gave you a brief introduction, but tell us what you do.
I'm accessible for anything